Are we recording? No, too much.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Ducks Watch Together. I'm Josh.
I'm Zach.
And on today's episode, we talk about the Goonies.
Yeah.
I guess. All right. Hey, everyone. As you notice, Kylie's not with us today. She had to take an out-of-town trip unexpectedly, and so we brought in an amazing replacement. We brought in our friend Zach. Zach, who you may recognize from a couple of Terrible Movie Tuesday episodes. Usually when I am gone, he comes on with Kylie, but alas, we are here together. Zach, as this might be your first episode on the podcast itself, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you like or dislike in film.
Ooh, I am an actor, and so I like a lot of stuff about film. I like how people can portray emotions, but mostly I just enjoy in film how it can take these things that we can't do on stage and really just lay them out there in front of us, these visual effects that we can't necessarily do on stage, and they unravel them, and they use CGI, or they use practical effects that we don't have the budget for or don't have the fly space for or anything, and they just unravel and they lay it out in front of us, and it's gorgeous.
Nice. Awesome. I enjoy it. Today, we're going to talk about... We're thinking about what it was that we wanted to do and what else we wanted to talk about and how we wanted to go through things. And knowing that we kind of had to make a last-minute change here, I was like, well, Zach, what are some things that you like to talk about? And got to a film called The Goonies.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Because it's amazing.
We figured that it would be interesting to have two differing opinions on The Goonies. Because Zach, how do you feel about The Goonies?
I love The Goonies.
And my feelings on it are this. So earlier today, Kylie may have sent me a text. And this text said, is it the best film of all time? And I simply said no. Is it the second greatest? And I said no. Is it the eighth greatest? And I said no. She said, where exactly do you rank it? I said 123,456,678,901st.
I feel like you're off by a lot.
Should it have been higher than that? Man, it should have been higher than that. I feel like
the number should have been a lot smaller.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, so today we're talking about The Goonies, a cult classic film. Comes out in 1985. The Goonies and I are about the same age. Yeah. Zach, what's this movie about if people have not seen The Goonies for some reason?
Well, if they haven't seen it, that's very sad. But this is about a group of kids who want an adventure, and they're all friends. And then there's some older people. But they're friends, too. And they go... And they want to find treasure, One-Eyed Willie's treasure. And then there's some bad guys that want the treasure as well. And so they go and they find the treasure, and it's a glorious adventure filled with lots of laughs and slight racism. But it's still a lovely film.
Family adventure of the 80s. Laughs and slight racism.
Look. It's not perfect, but it's a lovely film.
Oh, it's lovely.
I love this film.
Okay, great. When did you first watch The Goonies?
Ooh. I first watched The Goonies when I was 10 or 11. So that would have been... Numbers are hard.
That's fine. 10 or 11 is fine.
Yeah.
You are in probably 4th or 5th grade.
Yeah.
So just slightly younger than the main characters of the film, which is probably it's a nice, good, hard target demographic. So although The Goonies and I are the same age, I did not watch The Goonies as a child. I did not come across this film until I was in my college years, and a roommate of mine loved it. It was like, you haven't seen The Goonies? And then, so we had to watch it, because inherently when someone's like, you haven't seen this, you gotta sit down and watch
it. You have to watch it.
It's a cultural thing.
I don't do that. A lot of people go, you haven't seen it, you gotta watch it. And then I just don't watch it. I don't watch anything. So.
You watch all of the Thanksgiving movies, Zach.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about The Goonies.
You watch 23 in a row terrible movies.
I did not say in a row, I just said in 2 months. We're talking about the Goonies.
You should make some better choices. I mean, listen, if you watch the Goonies, you might as well count 24.
Look, hey, no.
Okay.
Bad Josh.
So, my first experience with this was as a college student. I do remember, like, seeing the box art in the video store as I was walking by there. And then I was like, that looks like a thing. I just never picked it up. I was into other things, I guess. Too busy watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the millionth time.
It's a good one.
Right? It's a great one.
It's not as good as the Goonies, but it's real close. Look, I think you just watched it too late in your life.
Yeah. That was one of the things that I've talked about with you and with others as well, is that Goonies, I think, is a real generational thing, and not generation of when you grow up with it, because I think it's loved, but beyond just its initial mid-80s to early 90s, like, kids. I think it's when you watch it as a kid. So if you watch it in that happy spot of somewhere between, like, 8 and, you know, I think even through a teenager can really appreciate this film. When you're still a kid, it'll connect with you a lot better. I don't know. I just, like, so I watched this movie, and so it's produced by Steven Spielberg, and it feels like a Spielberg film at times, which is a good thing. It's directed by Richard Donner, and it feels like a Richard Donner film at times, which means that it's way campy. It's written by Christopher Columbus, not the Explorer. It wasn't, like, a really old script by him, but a Christopher Columbus, the guy who did the first two Harry Potter films, Rent, Mrs. Doubtfire, and
all I know is that was
Percy Jackson.
Spielberg. No, we don't talk about that one either.
And so Chris Columbus is real up and down, and so I don't know, these kind of come together to create this world of the Goonies here that is, it's set in Astoria, Oregon. It's actually filmed in Astoria, Oregon, and they use that setting fairly well, but it's just mishmash of an adventure that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and you just kind of end up asking how they get from one place to another.
What do you mean it doesn't make sense?
Okay, here, answer. Riddle me this, Zach. Riddle me this. Okay, so, Data, Kiwu Kwong.
Yep.
Short Round. I always refer to him as Short Round from this point forward because I prefer him as Short Round.
No, his name is Data.
No.
Coming hot.
Short Round grabs the tooth thing because he's falling through a booby trap.
Right.
And he clips onto it.
Yeah.
And then he falls.
Uh-huh.
And the miraculously, miracle of miracle.
Pinches of power.
The pinches of power. The slinky doesn't break. So I'm fine there. Great. He saves his life. Next shot. Everybody's down in the pit of spikes. How'd they get there, Zach? How'd they get there?
They climb down.
Climb down what? The pinchers of power?
Yeah.
Shut your face.
They climb down.
That will not work. I'm so sorry.
Who says?
Logic says. Those things should not have been able to hold up one person, let alone... Okay, Brad? No, not Brad. What's his name? The boy. Josh Brolin. The teenage boy. His name is what? Brand. You love this movie. You don't know all the characters' names.
Look, just because I love it doesn't mean I need to know all their names. I just got done with the show. I'm tired. Leave me alone.
Okay, so, he's all, like, he's a full-grown human, and yet, it'll hold his strength. That little thing,
Or they climb down the rock walls.
They climb down, great. That scene that we don't need to see, that scene right there, like...
No, we really don't. Do we need to watch a bunch of kids climbing down a rock wall?
I mean, listen, it might be more interesting than some of this other stuff. Why did it take so long to get to the adventure? Goodness.
We had to introduce all the characters. And then we had to see the awesome car chase.
Alright, I'm gonna...
That was very short.
Yeah, right? I'm gonna pause this right here for a second. Alright, let's talk about this car chase. Car chase here.
Yeah?
I don't hate the opening car chase. I do find it convenient that the car chase just happens to go by every character that we meet throughout the rest of the film.
Okay, look, we have to find a way to introduce the character somehow. Alright? Not everyone can be clever at introducing characters.
Oh, okay. Not everyone can be clever at introducing characters. Great. I get that. So I just have to understand that to like the Goonies, I have to be able to just forgive its faults.
Look, it's not a bad way to introduce characters. It's better than just, you know,
showing up and being, oh, hi, this is me. And we don't introduce all the characters that way. Data and Mouth are not introduced that way.
They are. Do you want to pull up the movie? Did you bring it? Because they are. Data is sitting there. He's in the road, and he walks across, and he falls into a trash can, and they go right by him.
That's not really introduced, though.
But he's there. But for some reason, see, here's the point. If you're not going to introduce him, why is he there?
He's off shopping.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mouth isn't introduced that way.
Mouth is also in the sequence. I don't remember specifically where, but Mouth is in the sequence. I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to pull this up. Okay, hang on. This is called Josh Looks Up Goonies Opening Sequence. Goonies Opening.
This is the part where Zach is wrong about everything.
Sure. Hey, while we're doing that, why don't you tell me why you love the Truffle Shuffle? Because what the crap?
Okay, look. It was funny when I was young. I wouldn't say I love the Truffle Shuffle. I think it's funny when people try to imitate it.
What do you mean Mouth is not introed? He's right there! That is, I didn't even have to click play! He's on the TV!
Is that during the...
Yes, because his dad's like, hey, shut the TV off! And then he's like, slams the TV! And the car chase sounds are still happening out the window! And
again, he goes back to the faucet! Again, I just want to repeat... Just got done with the show. Tired.
Right? Okay. The other thing that's probably true is I watched this movie recently. Zach, when's the last time you watched it?
It's been 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, right? All right. So.
This movie will always, no matter what you say, remain in my top 10.
I'm fine. I am. My goal of this is by no means to get you to not like this movie. I will never. I think this is a good conversation to have. Just because. I think we can have an open discussion about things and know that, like, I can hate this movie and you can love this movie, and that's part of the beauty of film. Mm-hmm. And that by any means of when we debate about something or when I debate with anybody about film, I don't want them to change their mind. Right. I just want to have that open dialogue with them and be like,
it's just fun to debate.
Why do you love this thing that I think is utter nonsense? And I get that with this movie in particular, if you don't have the nostalgia for this movie, I don't think you're gonna like this movie. No. I would be surprised if there was many adults who found it and liked it.
Yeah.
Because there's just not a lot there for adults.
Well, see, here's the thing. For me, I don't think it's even the nostalgia. Maybe it's there a little bit, but when I was younger, like, I've always been the adventurous one in my family. You know, I've always been the one that's wanted to go out and just do things and not sit at home, and that's why I'm active all the time, is because I'm still that way. And so when I was younger, I connected with Mikey. I was like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's go.
Sean Astin. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Let's go find the treasure. Like, I want to be like that. Like, I've always wanted to go on those adventures. I didn't want to stay at home. I wanted to go outside. I wanted to go play. I wanted to go to different towns and explore caves and all this stuff. And so it's not just nostalgia for me. It's like I connected with that character and I wanted to be that character.
That's fair, and I think that that's a good reason as to why when you're younger, this movie can really hit with you, and this movie can connect with you. There was an interesting thing that I was looking at through this film, because when I watched it recently, it's only the second time I've ever seen it, so I mostly have a pretty modern lens to look at this film, and I think it's really interesting to look at their relationships in terms of where we are today in terms of relationship between like men and women and relationships and how we want to treat each other and relationships of, you know, what race looks like and things like that. And this film at its heart, I think, has the message of accept people, accept everyone. However, I think it gets at it in a really weird way because they spend the whole movie like, so for me, one of my issues with it is the way they treat the Chunk character. And Chunk is a character who is the largest of the boys, and for his age would maybe be considered overweight, and is made fun of for being slow and clumsy, and he's forced to do the Truffle Shuffle, which he clearly doesn't want to do, which is where you lift up your shirt and you dance, which, as a child who was overweight, that's something I would never do. I'd be like, peace out. You guys are not my friends anymore if this is what you're going to make me do. So it's kind of in this society where, like, these boys are friends, But they're kind of mean to each other through all of this movie, which held me at arm's distance from them. I was like, why don't you just be nice to each other? Why aren't you just friends with each other? Maybe that's just how I had friends, and it was different in the 80s. And I mean, I wasn't very far away from the 80s. I was in the 90s. To be fair, I was a nerdy kid in the 90s, and nerds are very different than most other kids. So there is that. I was also a theater kid, so it's fine. Like, I had a different friendship.
No, I was the same. Like, I was a nerd. I was a theater kid, but I also had those friends that we would just joke around like that together, and we were completely fine. Like,
right.
It was a mutual understanding of, we don't actually mean it. We're just playing around.
You know, right.
This is our relationship together. And that's what I got from that movie, was that, you know, they had that relationship where they could do this and everything would be fine in the end.
And I get that. And I definitely think that, like, there is a sense of comfortableness when you get with a friendship and you kind of can rag on each other, and that's all good and fine there. I didn't see a lot, and it's maybe because with the Chunk character in particular, he is separated from the group for most of the film. I don't see a lot of people sticking up and standing up for him in those moments as well. Whereas with the other characters, they do stand up for each other, and you see that it's a lot of playful ragging on each other and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it's just one of my things. I will say one of the things I do think this movie gets right is the relationships between adolescent boys and their older brothers and their girls they like and each other and the way they talk. I think it works really well, and it understands that. So that I totally get and understand. All right. I got another riddle for you.
What?
Okay. Does this movie posit, does it say that going on an adventure with your friends will cure asthma?
No, and that's not, you know, everyone knows that was a little bit far-fetched and whatnot, but...
Well, like, at the end of the movie, he's just like...
Right, he just chucks his...
I don't need this anymore! Literally, I don't need this anymore!
And we all know, the rest of that story is, he goes back home, he gets a new one, because he does need it, and... But in that moment, he was like, I am feeling confident. I've made it through this adventure. You know, I've gotten this far. I've kissed a girl. Because that's all adolescent boys think of. And I am almost at the end of this adventure. You know, I think at that point, they've just seen the ship, right?
Right. No, it's actually, it's at the very, very end on the beach.
Oh, okay.
So they're already being, like, his parents are there.
They just got through all this stuff. And he's, in that moment... And probably that moment alone, able to control his breathing more.
Right.
Because he's just, you know, he's feeling confident. He's feeling better about himself, basically. And he's able to control it better. But I'm most definitely thinking he goes back home, gets a new inhaler.
I mean, listen, from what the film tells me, I just have to believe that this adventure cured asthma for him.
Right. No.
I don't need this anymore.
You know... There are something, I will admit, it does have some flaws, but I still think it's a good movie because it has a target audience of adolescent boys, and I think it hits on that, I think it hits the points for those boys really well, like the car chase and the pirate ship, it's all things that
there's a lot of good adventure like in here.
Yeah.
And it feels very Spielbergian in that sense of, like, you can tell this is Spielberg had a lot to do with this film. It's got his stamp all over it with the way he explores childhood and the way that he kind of idolizes it in a way, and the way that, you know, kids on bikes, and there's this whole adventure that the adults are not really present for, and then the themes of the big adventure through pirating and exploring history and things like that. So it really feels Spielbergian in so many ways. I think one of the things that I do kind of struggle with this film is Richard Donner is the director, and Richard Donner did the original Superman film, Superman the movie, and some other things. And I also have an issue with that film is that I feel like Donner's films are really campy. And in a way that I don't necessarily think that camp is bad, but in a way of just like, I wish that this film kind of at times took itself a little bit more seriously than what it is, because I think it would help raise the stakes, because I don't ever feel like these kids are in danger throughout all of this. And they've got people shooting at them, and they've got like the villains chasing them, and there's this whole thing where I don't know. It just I don't feel they're in danger because I don't think the kids are taking it all seriously, except for Mikey. Mikey is there, and he's like he's on board. But yeah, no, 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 it's just something that like I was like, oh, they're gonna get to the end of this movie and everything's gonna be fine, which might just mean having watched movies before, but there wasn't a real sense of dread for me in this film.
No, and I get that. When you know, when I first watched it, I of course was a kid and I was like, oh no, what's gonna happen? But in the back of my mind, I knew. I was like, you know, it's a movie, they're gonna be completely fine. But I think that's completely fine, you know, that way you don't scare the adolescent boys too much. Mm-hmm. You know, are they gonna make it, or are they not, you know, and you can still show them adventure, even if it is slightly dangerous, can still be fun. And yes, don't go on these adventures, but should an opportunity to go on an adventure that is not going to get you in harm's way arise, go for it, you know.
Right.
Go have that fun, go make those memories with your friends. And so I think knowing the whole time that they're going to make it through and all that is good for the target audience.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's something that just speaks to who the target audience for this is, and that it doesn't play outside of that. And so I sometimes will make a distinction between a good film and a good kids film. And this might just be a good kids film, not a good film, like to right. me. And so I think, yeah, there's just a lot of like, also, okay, I got my next riddle. Here you go.
All right, here we go.
Riddle me this. Why is sloth the way sloth is?
Well, I mean, we can go with the whole people are born with defects. And in the 80s, they were treated differently.
Right.
And so we can go with that, or we can go with the horrible backstory of, you know, mother burned him or whatever. There's so many things.
There is a backstory given in the film. There's one given in the film that's ridiculous that Anne tried to deny too. Anne is also a defender of this movie. So what happens is, near the end of the film, they're on the pirate ship, and Mama Fratelli is there with Sloth.
She dropped
it. And like, she's like singing when the bell breaks, the cradle will fall. And then he's like, fall. And he points to his bad eye. And he's like, fall. Fall. And she's like, I may have dropped you once or twice. So the film tells you that Sloth was born regularly and then was dropped twice and like had his eye shift down and then became Sloth.
Well, I mean, that's drawing into it a little bit. That could be straightforward. No, hold on. That could be it.
Okay.
Babies do have a very soft head.
Yes.
Still.
Yes.
And so that the dropping could definitely play a huge part in it. However, there still might be some, like, birth or whatever. Because I don't think it would shift that far
down. I mean, would hope not.
The skull is not that malleable when the child is still growing and, you know, just born.
Right.
That child will be dead. If
yes!
It is that.
That's what I'm saying! Yeah.
So I'm certain that there is still some, like, I get what you're getting at.
But, like, so, in all of these riddles, I'm like, you have to kind of go a little bit deeper than what the film wants you to, or the film gives you, to kind of make them make sense. And I would just, a film that works on such a adolescent level, you'd think that it would try to tie up some more of these things. And I get that also, when you're watching this as a 9 or 10-year-old, you probably don't even really think about that stuff. It's just, it's an adventure, no, it's there, you know. Sloth has always been a character that I've never loved. I always kind of felt uncomfortable watching it because even when I watched it for the first time, almost 10 years ago or so now. Oh, gosh. 10 years. Jeez. Oh. Even when I did that, it was, I think it's really hard for me to watch characters with disabilities be portrayed in the way that Sloth is, and it is portrayed in a bad light, and the Fratellis are not good people because of it, you know, and they are portrayed as doing wrong, and Chunk does become his friend, and so there's a lot of redemption to it, but I feel like there's a lot of humor at Sloth's expense and not with Sloth,
right,
and that's just hard for me to watch and hard for me to laugh at, you know. And so it's also similar reason to like The Accountant earlier this year, where for some reason Ben Affleck's character in that movie was autistic, and yet it was a very insensitive portrayal of an autistic person, you know. And so I get that there are better ways to get humor out of things, there are better ways to write jokes, and even in the 80s I think that we can see that they're we should be a little bit more sensitive about what it is that we're trying to present to kids as a joke. You know, and I guess the redeeming quality of the film is that it does come around to say, at least Chunka says, I love you and you can move in with me. Also, did Chunk clear that with his parents? No.
No, not at all.
He just invited a random strange man to come live with him.
You know, it happened.
Gotta do what you gotta do, right?
It was the 80s. They're different.
No, also, come live with him where? In their house that is going to be foreclosed upon?
Their house was fine.
I was really unclear about whose house was being foreclosed upon, because at some points it seemed like it was just Sean Astin's, and at other points it seemed like the whole town was moving away.
It was just Mikey's neighborhood. And so Dada, I can see Dada being foreclosed.
Because he's next door neighbor. Yeah.
But it was, from what I got, it was just like kind of that neighborhood.
Right. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. But, and I do, so as a kid, I didn't pick up on the whole sloth thing and the insensitivities. But as I got older, as I worked with the more people and kids with disabilities and whatnot, and then working in the autism classes and all that stuff, and becoming a paraeducator and working with life skills, right, and all this, it's definitely not as funny for me. You know, it's not,
right,
you know, but I still love the character, because he goes through all these trials and hardships, and the first time you meet him, he's chained to a chair forced to watch TV, and the last thing we see is him saving the day, you know, and then Chunk, you know, come live with me and all that, and he's found friends and he's found a good family, and he just saved these kids, and so that it's that whole redemption, and that's why I love the character, is because even through all these hardships and terrible life, he's grown up and become a hero.
Right. Yeah. Literally, when he pulls off a shirt, he's wearing a Superman shirt.
Yes.
And they play the Superman logo, or the Superman theme, and then you're like, oh, Richard Donner directed this, and Superman.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that as a kid.
I get it.
In fact, didn't even realize it was a Superman theme when I was a kid, because I really don't care for Superman.
Well, that's fine. Superman's kind of boring.
Yeah. Who needs a superhero that can do everything?
Who needs a superhero who can do everything? Why do you think this film holds on through to today's generation, through generations who keep seeing it?
It goes back to the target audience. You know, it holds on to this generation because it's a new generation. You know, there's those children that want to go on adventures, and this movie will hold on to the target audience for as long as people keep having kids, and that's my opinion, because it targets so well that it really just connects to young adolescents, mainly adolescent boys. There are, you know, it does hit with adolescent girls. I'm not one, but I would assume.
Yeah, what, there are boys and girls that like this film.
Yeah, but I think it does really well with the boys in particular, because it's, you know, it's got the male leads as the 80s movies had and all that.
Right.
And so I think it will continue to be beloved by many children until people stop having children.
Which, who knows when that'll be. Right. I just think what baffles me is that, and there might not actually be a ton of these other, but what baffles me is that there are kids that find this film that are not shown up by their parents. Because I feel like if your parents show this to you and pass down through generations, all right, fine. But I just think there's better versions of this film. There's films like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, or E.T., or The Labyrinth, or many other things. I mean, even like a Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, yes, I know it's not a child lead, but like, I just think there are films that are done better than this one. Or even like a Hook, you know, in those kind of ways of, like, just in that Steven Spielberg kind of model of what kids are and what they can do. And this one just, it feels, I don't know, it just feels clunky to me. And
it can be clunky at points, but I think that's some of the charm to it.
I don't need clunky charm. I just need it to be good. I want it to be more streamlined than what it is. I want that beginning segment to... It takes them so long, not only to get out of the house, which that's the part where, like, Mouth... I hate Mouth. That kid is annoying, and if he was out of this movie, I'd probably like it more.
But we all have that friend.
Great. You all can have that friend. I don't want to watch him on screen. Like, especially in this movie, where he dominates so much of this early film, that I'm just like, I'm done with you, Corey Feldman. How did you become famous? Stop your crap. And I don't think the performers are bad in this film. I actually quite enjoy what most of them are doing. I think my favorite one is Josh Brolin as Brand. I enjoyed that, but I don't know. While I did give this film praise for being a film about real kids and showing real kids, there was definitely a time where the dialogue and where it was so over the so much over the top of each other, and just boys talking over the top of each other and flipping quips at each other and screaming, that I was just like, I'm okay, buddies. Like,
right.
Can one of you maybe die so there is less screaming? That'd be great.
Spielberg and
Donner? Chris Columbus. The writer or the director?
Director.
Donner.
They could have toned down the reel a little bit.
I mean, I get... I don't...
Because that's adolescent boys right there.
It is. Like, it's so good. And maybe it's just adolescent boys that bother me and not this film. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe I'm just like, man... 80s adolescent boys who... If I'm being a little bit self-reflective in that sense of... Maybe these just remind me of the boys who picked on me in school too much. Right. And so I don't like them. Yeah. You know? So, like, Mouth is an annoying character. Also, riddle me this! How old is Mouth?
12, 13?
Okay, great! Hang on, I'm gonna find a character name here real fast.
Bring up the fact that he knows Spanish?
No, he can know Spanish. That's fine. How old is Steph?
16, 17.
Great! So the 12 or 13-year-old ends up romantically involved with the 16 or 17-year-old?
They didn't get that romantically involved.
They still got romantically involved there, Zach!
Look,
I'm looking real hard right now.
Barely.
Oh, barely? Man, she was like, Mouth is set up to be the same age as all the other younger boys. And at the end of this movie, him and Steph have this, like, ooh, you're not so bad after all, kind of thing. Whereas in the next scene, the other girl, Andy, tells Mikey, like, aw, you're cute. You're still a child. You've still got some growing up to do. And goes to his older brother.
And yet Mikey is still the one that made out with her.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're freaking out about Mouth?
Listen, it's
who just had a conversation with a female?
No. Hang on. This is requited. This might be more on Steph's end than on Mouth's end. Let's be real.
Again, okay. It was just a conversation, whereas
it was Mikey, more than a conversation.
Look, they don't have to become romantically involved right then.
But
there is a thing as waiting.
We don't know they're gonna do that.
Again, we don't know what they're gonna do.
You're making assumptions there.
You're making assumptions.
My assumptions are based on what's in the film.
No,
yours are like, no.
They had a conversation.
No, I'm sorry. No.
You're ridiculous. They had a conversation.
Yeah, a romantic conversation.
Whereas Mikey was making out with a female, and you don't.
Also,
care.
Also in that
don't
scene.
Care at all.
Listen. First off, barely remember that it happened. Second off, they addressed it. They addressed it in that sense of, she was like, no, you're too little. None of that nonsense again. I'm going to go make out with your brother instead. And then the mom, this is one thing that bothered me the most in this film. So the mom at the very end, so she goes over and she's like, starts making out with Brand. And dad's like, should I do something? And mom's like, nope, that's her mom's problem. Be like, yeah, no, don't discipline your boys, everybody. The girls have to learn the discipline there.
I'll give you that one.
Again, it's a misogynistic society, and it's a film that comes from that. I don't, like, that's not one of those things that I would really hold against the film very often, because it is from its creators. Right. It's a knock on the film, but not anything where I'd be like, well, yeah.
Right, and it came from a different era.
It did, and I would just have to be like... I just personally have to be like, if my kids were watching, I'd be like, no, this mom is wrong. This mom should be disciplining her son at this moment if they think that's a thing that needs to be disciplined at all.
Yeah.
All right, so Corey Feldman was born in 1971.
Okay.
And Martha Plimpton, who plays Steph, was born in 1970. So they're actually only a year apart in Realsy's age.
So it's fine.
But Corey Feldman is real short.
And we don't know. Like, he could have been on the higher end of the age.
I mean, sure. Like, it could be 14 to 16 if we assume he's older and she's younger.
Right. But it doesn't lay out the ages.
I know it doesn't. I do. But it is clear, though, that he's a part of the younger friend group and she's part of the older friend group.
But he in some weird way, he does seem on the older end to me.
It's probably a...
Whereas Chunk is definitely on the younger end.
Interesting. I thought that Data would probably be the youngest out of them.
Well, Data's definitely on the younger end.
Right.
But Chunk is there with him.
Yeah.
Mikey is somewhere in the middle.
I would just assume it was a bunch of... So, just based on, like... I assume it was a bunch of 8th graders, just based on how they are and where they act, things like that. And then a bunch of sophomores. Because Brand says that he, or his brother just says he just failed his driver's test. You generally take your driver's test in your sophomore year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or unless you wait like me.
Right. Unless you're just like, I'm going to do it when I'm 20. It's fine.
Look, I took it when I was 18, all right? I did not wait until last year to take it.
Also in the scene where Martha Plimpton and Corey Feldman get to get romantical together. It's really clear that Corey Feldman is standing on a box to make him look the same height as
absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely.
And I was like, what are you doing? Stop it. He's tiny. What are you doing?
Look, they were on a rocky shore. It could have been a rock.
Right? So, yeah.
No, absolutely. There was some soapboxes made.
I guess I can't forgive this film as much as other people can, and so then because I can't forgive it, I see the adventure, and while I admit there is some sequences, like the log sequence where they're trying to get across it and the two guys right behind them is really fun. Yeah. I love the setting. I love how they film this film and use Astoria. I love the boat, the pirate ship at the end. I think there's some really beautiful production design in this film. And I get that it's fun. At times, I just can't shut my brain off enough to enjoy the film, and I think that is a big, big problem for me. I shouldn't have to shut my brain off to enjoy it, because there are adventure films that you don't have to shut your brain off to enjoy, you know? And yes, I mean, I will quote all day long films like E.T. and Stand By Me and Raiders of the Lost Ark as great adventure films, and I'm sure you could sit here and, just like I am doing, just pick them apart, you know?
Right.
But I think there's more answers in the stories of those scripts. And this script just seems really, really lean on answers for everything.
Yeah, well, and that's where I'm different, because I go into every movie with my brain shut off. Because I can do that. Like, I can just shut my brain off, go in, watch a movie, and if it's good, it's good. If it's bad, I get outraged like Suicide Squad. And want to leave the entire time, but stick through it because... I am there and I paid, so why not?
So why not?
But I can go into any movie. I always set my expectations low for every single movie I go into because I don't want to be disappointed. And sometimes I still am disappointed. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, it was all right. Or other times I'm blown away. And there are people like that that are able to just go in and shut their brains off. And that's a larger part of society, I would argue.
It is. No, I agree that it's a larger part of society that is able to go in and shut their brains off. That is why many, many films become very, very popular when I'm like, you guys, this is populist nonsense.
And as much as it's joked about on the Terrible Movie Tuesdays and whatnot about my terrible, terrible sense of movies, I am still able to tell when a movie is good.
I mean, fair.
And even if it has faults, tell what those faults are. Like this one, I mean, it has its faults. It has some problems that could have been worked out or could have been done differently, but it's still a good movie because of what it does for who it does.
Right. I think there was something that a friend of mine told me at one point. My friend Jeff said that he was at a critics kind of symposium thing one time, and he had mentioned that when you're looking at something, you want to look at it in terms of, did it set out to do what it wanted to do, and did it successfully do that to the best of its ability? And in comparing something, you can't compare everything to everything else, because everything has different intentions. And so that's the question that I have to ask with the Goonies, is do I think that the Goonies is a great version of what it was trying to be? And I don't think it is. I think there are better films out there of what it was trying to be. Do I think it's a super, super poor, super, super bad film? No. But do I like it, or would I ever want to watch it again? No. Like, I literally told Anthony, I was like, I hope you enjoy watching this film today. It's probably the last time you're ever going to do it. So.
I think, for what it set out to do, I don't think it meant all of the expectations of what it wanted to do, but it did hit enough bars.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason it has a cult following, there's a reason it sticks around. It's fun at times, but I think it overall flops hard for me.
Right, and you know, it's just, it's all about the different ages that we watched it at, and kind of the different senses of what we like. You know, for me, it'll always be in my top 10.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that it does have its merits. I think it does have its faults. But that's the Goonies. It's not a perfect film. So, one of my favorite reviews that I found, because I was kind of reading through them, is from Gene Siskel. If you're not aware who Gene Siskel is, he's the other half of Siskel and Ebert, who are a very famous movie review pair, Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel.
Never heard of him.
Great, fantastic. His review for this film was, as entertaining as The Goonies finally becomes in its final act, and The Last Hour is one of the most pleasurable, one pleasure after another. It's a shame that Spielberg, Columbus, and Donner felt the need to take the low road in terms of language. And I'm like, I just love that he's such an old doddering, like, he's like, oh, this film was great, and then the children started swearing. And I'm like, children swear, buddy. Get over it.
more so nowadays.
Yes. But yeah. No, I think that it hits it's there. Yeah, absolutely. Zach, on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you rate The Goonies?
I would put it at a 4.
Nice. I'm gonna give it a real solid 2.
Hey, it's better than 1.
It's better than a 1. There you go. There's some fun things in here, and if you are a Spielberg completist or if you like Spielberg, there's going to be some hallmarks of his that ring kind of true and feel nice here. So
or if you have adolescent boys at the moment,
if you have adolescent boys,
might get a laugh.
It's true, you might. So yeah, awesome. Well, hey, we thank you guys so much for listening to Ducks Watch Together. You can get a hold of us in many, many different ways. So the first way is on our website, which is friendoffriendpodcasts.squarespace.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page at Friend of a Friend Podcasts. You can find us on the Tumblr at Ducks Watch Together, the YouTube at Ducks Watch Together, the Letterboxd. I am Darby ACT. Kylie is Kylie Gallisher. Zach is not on Letterboxd. You can't find him on that Letterboxd there. You can find us on the Twitters at FOAF_podcast, at Josh_Reality, at Kylie_Is_Plush. Zach, are you on the Twitter?
At PyGod13.
At PyGod13. You should give him a follow and say, hey, we listen to you and you are quite awesome. You can also, hey, Zach, how else can they get in touch with you?
Hey, so if you want to support me, you can find me at twitch.tv/PyGod13. I am a streamer. It's a little bit of a switch up from movies and whatnot to video games. Or you can find me on YouTube at PyGod13Gaming.
Nice. Fantastic. And finally, and most importantly for our show, please contact us on iTunes. By contact us, I mean leave us a 5-star review or subscribe to the podcast. It helps us get higher up on those charts and helps us get out to the people in the world around them so that we can have other people join the conversations and so that you all can talk to us, and we love it. We've actually had quite a bit of audience interaction recently on some of our Facebook posts, especially concerning... Oh, man, there were some things that I was going to talk about here. Hang on. Our Logan post. Our Logan post got a couple of love it's and awesome movies from a couple people as well, and we very much appreciate that. So we thank you so much for joining, and we responded back to you guys on the forum there. So, friends, thank you so much for listening. I've been Josh.
I've been Zach.
Quack, 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 quack.